Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Joellen Lind, Republican Stephanie Hitt, talk show host Bruno Behrend, and Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 as the program unfolds this evening. We're going to give you an opportunity to give your opinion, not so instant opinion, in reaction to the debate the other evening between Barack Obama and John McCain. We want to get your reaction, regardless of where you are. And most importantly, I'd like to hear from people who maybe your mind was made up or maybe your mind was switched by what you saw. But 1-800-723-8289. But first of all, we begin with the big story, obviously following up on the story that we talked about last week, the defining story perhaps of our time, at least economically in our lifetime, and that is the $700 billion government bailout. It has been discussed behind closed doors for the last several weeks now. It is, according to reports, they have reached an agreement. It will go to Congress next week to be debated and perhaps sail through and be signed by the President of the United States. But according to Forbes, here are some of the details. I'm going to put some of the details out for discussion, give our guests in the studio an opportunity to respond, and give you an opportunity to respond as well. Here are some of the details. The Treasury will acquire troubled assets in one of two ways. They will enter a firm and take over all the bad assets, or firms will be able to participate in an auction. The Treasury will have some authority to determine the executive compensation structure of that firm. There would be a surtax of 20% on packages defined by legislation as golden parachutes for companies losing the salary deduction. The Treasury would also take warrants in companies that do participate. The warrants reduce the risk of the government, since if the price of government pays is too low and the banks benefit, the government would own a share of that benefit. The government could end up making money by selling the assets. The Treasury Department will be able to buy troubled mortgage-backed securities from companies that have difficulty selling them in the marketplace. The bill will contain several oversight provisions, which obviously a lot of Americans want to be sure there is that oversight. First, an oversight board made up of the Treasury Secretary, the Secretary of Commerce, and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board and the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission. The bill will contain several oversight provisions, including a government accountability office that would audit the program. Third, an independent inspector general for the program with online disclosure of all transactions. Several measures are designed to help reduce the number of mortgage foreclosures in the country. The government, as the owner of mortgages and mortgage-backed securities, will be allowed to make loan modifications by lowering principal interest rates on mortgages or extending the life of a mortgage. A voluntary program will give firms the ability to pay insurance premiums on troubled assets to the Treasury. House Republicans demanded this point be included to lessen the amount of government money that is being used in the financial rescue effort. The Treasury would be allowed to buy $250 billion in troubled assets immediately. The President could request an additional $100 billion at any time, and Congress would have the right to not approve the remaining $350 billion. However, that action is subject to the President's veto. Eric Zorn is one of our guests this evening, longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Eric, nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Bruce.
This is probably the biggest fiscal story you've covered, we've all covered. Your reaction to at least these piecemeal pieces of this plan that we are debating tonight.
Well, I have to say, your explanation of it was about the first lengthy explanation of it that I've heard today. I've been.
Would you like me to repeat it?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind. No, and you know, my feeling about this hasn't changed for the last several days, which is it seems to me like a really bad idea, but about the only idea that we've got. Right now, that this is a big risk for the government and a big risk for us as a nation. But you know, I have been persuaded by the bipartisan voices that I've heard, who know a lot more about economics, macroeconomics, than I do, that this is a real crisis and this is what we have to do. We have to do something very much like this. It sounds like they have a lot of the safeguards in place.
Stephanie Hitt is our card-carrying Republican tonight. She's a delegate for John McCain. Is John McCain going to support this package, and should he?
I do think he is going to support it. One, it is clear from what we're hearing about the plan that's been proposed that it is bipartisan. And we all know that John McCain definitely works hard to support bipartisan efforts. I think we also had a hint of that from the debate where he said, sure, I hope so. And I think we can count on his support on this.
Jo Ellen Lind also joins us. She's our Democrat. She's from Valparaiso School of Law. A Democrat, supports Barack Obama.
Right.
Is Barack Obama going to support it, and should he support it? And do you support it?
I'm sort of with Eric. I think that this is sort of a second best option, but we have to do something. So I suppose I grudgingly support it. I think Obama will support it. He indicated in the debate that he would, and it has several of the key features. It has several of the key features he was looking for in talking about what any bailout package should have that he would want to support.
Bruno Barrett also joins us, who is a talk show host, Extreme Wisdom. He's with WKRS Radio. Nice to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
What's your reaction to this this bailout by the government? Is there any way that we could have avoided it?
If you go all the way back to the 1970s and then the 80s and then the 90s, you can always make cases where it could have been avoided. At this point in time, there's no way to avoid this style of a bailout short of triggering an economic conflagration of sorts. So it's pretty clear that we can go back and try and assess blame, and quite frankly, that might not be a bad idea. But here it looks like the better angels of their nature came together, and they actually came up with a workable plan that, quite frankly, almost has to be passed.
Is it one of those examples, however, that this is the only time you can get everybody in the same room, at least talking with the same goal, and it takes a crisis, whether it's this or an attack like 9/11, that's the only way to bring people together?
That was the exact analogy I was going to use. So you got me first, Bruce. It's amazing that it takes that kind of a crisis, and quite frankly, it shouldn't take that kind of a crisis, but everything I've looked at here seems to me that a bunch of people got together and said it's time to stop trying to load this up with each of our partisan ideas and come up with something that's workable. And it's not the best thing in the world, but quite frankly, at the end of the entire process, chances are better than 50% that it actually makes the government money.
It's kind of amazing that they've been able to do this at this political time, because this is everybody is looking for a little political advantage. And I've heard a lot of, you know, people who are talking about, well, maybe what's going to happen is that they're going to get this plan going and then McCain's going to turn on it because there's a solid part of the conservative base that's still not going to be with it. And there's a lot of people out there, maybe even a majority of people out there, who still don't get it, like I don't quite right. get it, and who don't like it.
Well, we also want to take a look at what McCain and Obama did last Friday night at Ole Miss. Did any of them show any leadership on this subject? 1-800-723-8289 when we talk debate when we come back to Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit GoRedForWomen.org.
Go Red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
to Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Sacramento, California to Lynchburg, Virginia, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. In addition to talking about the debate, if you want to offer your instant reaction to the plan that we've just talked about, whether or not you would advise your congressman to vote yes or no against the bill. According to some of the reports, the numbers are running 10-1 against it in some congressional offices. So you'll have an opportunity to weigh in on that issue in addition to the debate. I want to sort of begin the discussion of the debate by talking about the first 35 to 40 minutes of the debate the other night, and that is this was an opportunity for either man to step up and really demonstrate that they wanted to lead the nation and rally the troops for a particular plan or some great new vision that they had to help during this bailout crisis. Did anyone, even our partisans who are with us tonight, can anybody say with a straight face that one of those two men really shined during that first 40 minutes of the debate?
I'll jump in right away and say I think that everybody was too afraid to take an aggressive step. Let's face it, we've had congressional leaders, we've had the president, we've had both candidates kind of look at this financial crisis and say, we don't really know what's going on. Paulson and a few people at Goldman Sachs may be the only people who know what's going on, so neither of them, I think, wanted to take any risk. And, you know, given the fact that it's so close to an election, that was probably the better judgment at that time.
Yeah, I heard a lot of rhetoric, a lot of people not wanting to get too far out on a limb because, you know, you get too far out on an issue like this, that limb can snap off. And I also felt the same way when they talked about, okay, well, one of you two gentlemen is going to be the next president. What kind of how is this going to change your agenda? What's going to have to be cut? And boy, you heard a lot of...
Last week at the end of the broadcast, during the last few minutes, we talked about whether either one of the candidates was likely to come out against the plan, whatever the plan turns out to be. Mm-hmm. And the thought was that if anybody did, it was probably more likely that maybe McCain would do it because it reinforces his maverick stance. Do you think there's a possibility that from a political standpoint, John McCain could still come out against this? Or because of the involvement of the House Republicans, does he now have enough appropriate cover, if you will, to back this?
I think McCain really understands that one, this really is become a bipartisan effort, and it's something that he's always promoted and all of these kind of reform policies. And the other thing is, I noticed at the debate, he was hesitant to really attack any plan, and he was hesitant to sort of lay out specific, you know, specific critiques he would have of the plan, which says to me that McCain is going to have to work with this plan, understand the details. He's willing to give that thought. He's also not going to interject himself in such a way as to convolute or misdirect the final focus of the plan. So I think what we saw there was maybe a hesitancy from McCain to take a strong stand against that plan. And I think what we're going to see is that he's going to be working with the plan as it's agreed upon in the House and Senate.
Joella, your reaction?
Well, I think there's no way he could change his mind now, because the spin this morning, particularly from Senator Graham, is that he's the great savior, that he came in as the sort of mortgage meltdown messiah and made this plan happen, which I think is fantasy. But it would be difficult for him to back away from it now, since that's sort of the message that's coming out from his campaign managers.
Before we get to the specifics and some of the content that was debated for 90 minutes and hosted by Jim Lehrer, one of the criticisms that has come out of Senator McCain is that he never, ever looked at Barack Obama. Now, in many cases, that's part of that is politics 101. You never want to give any credibility to your candidate. That's generally something that's practiced at lesser offices than running for the presidency of the United States. You clearly had Jim Lehrer trying to encourage them to engage mm-hmm. each other and ask questions and look each other. But again, was there something disrespectful about John McCain's body language in your view, Eric?
Well, I didn't really notice the eye contact thing until afterwards when the talking heads were pointing it out. What I did notice, though, quite strongly, was his disrespectful rhetoric in talking over again about, you know, my opponent doesn't understand this, he's naive, this insulting and belittling tone that McCain took toward Obama. And you know, we talked a little bit, Stephanie was talking about how John McCain is such a bipartisan guy, and how and there was, you know, and then immediately after the debate's over, McCain's campaign cuts an ad showing how Obama is agreeing with McCain on I mean, there's a number of times, probably too many, Obama said, you know, I agree with the senator about that. But they cut all these sound bites together and they said, Barack Obama not ready to lead. Well, what's the excuse for that? This is a guy who says, like, I want to be bipartisan, I want to reach across the aisle. As soon as Barack Obama says, you know, I agree with you on some things, Senator McCain, he takes advantage of, he leaps on him and takes advantage of and tries to shake him by the neck. I thought that was low, and I was going to let
Stephanie go first.
You know, it's interesting because when I was watching the debate, one of the things that really struck me was how very presidential McCain did appear, and how unpresidential and somewhat flip that Barack Obama appeared. And in particular, I thought he presented McCain as a very reserved, fairly humble servant. And if anything, he failed to grandstand, especially on some of the economic issues, where he can. And that's a typical McCain fault. I think he tends not to blow his own horn very well. But one of the things that sort of surprised me about Barack Obama was his casual approach to what I think most people would agree was a very, very formal, important event.
Joellen,
I would have to say just the opposite. I thought that the person who appeared to be presidential, calm, under control, somebody who was respectful of his opponent, who tried to personalize it. He called McCain by his first name. He called him John. You didn't hear the word Barack uttered once. He was unflappable. He didn't lose his cool. I thought that McCain, on the other hand, fumfered around a little bit, seemed to lose his thought every now and then. And the character stuff came out enough so that he was perceived by a lot of people who were polled immediately afterward and who were in focus groups by women and independents as being unnecessarily mean and unpresidential. So I would say it's just the opposite,
Bruno,
from what you're saying.
I can't speak for what focus groups and polls did, but there's something very interesting that people should understand, and that's politics ain't beanbag, and this is Chicago. McCain is executing a presidential program against a tough opponent in a tough election year, and this is just the kind of stuff that he's going to do. When you turn around and say, my opponent doesn't understand, I mean, he said doesn't understand or naive 6 to 9 times.
Right.
Whereas Barack Obama said, Senator McCain is right. I agree with Senator McCain. Now, Barack Obama may be given credit for trying to change the tone of things and being a different kind of candidate, and maybe you want to give him credit for that. Maybe he's taking too much of a risk in trying to be so professorial. The fact of the matter is, McCain is going to do what he needs to do to win, and I think that the overall upshot from the punditry and the rest of the nation is you saw somebody who wants to be the nation's professor or prime minister, and you saw somebody who wants to be the nation's president. In the United States, we elect presidents.
You know, you were talking about the number of times that Obama said, you know, I agree with John, but also there was I thought it was the strongest of all the exchanges is when he was looking right at McCain, even though McCain was not returning, you know, the courtesy of looking at him, when he said, you were wrong, you know, when he talked about where he was wrong.
Right.
He said, you did this, you were wrong. You did this, you were wrong. I mean, that I thought was one of the, I think that is where he landed punches. And I thought there was some landing of punches about when they got into sort of the minutiae of, you know, when you're meeting with, you know, with a despot. I mean, you know,
right.
Do you meet by the,
right.
you know, face to face? Do your associates meet with them? I mean, that seemed to be the most heated part of the debate, even though, you know, I don't think it was terribly the most important part of the debate.
And I agree. I thought that when he was going after him with you were wrong about your judgment, you were wrong about this. And what and where I really fault Obama in this debate was I thought that he left a lot of points out there. And,
yes.
and he when you had that when you were wrong about this, you were wrong about this, and he didn't follow up. And he didn't keep hammering on that. He said that
not
like
a
four
good
times.
Debater.
Well, he's not.
I mean, that's not his strength. And yet, I would also say is, I mean, I thought he looked presidential. I frankly thought they both looked presidential. Frankly, I was stunned by John McCain. I've never seen John McCain look better. He was not stumbling. He was not looking for words. He didn't show his age. God bless him for standing there for 90 minutes.
I think one of the reasons we see that, too, is that on many of the issues that were discussed, McCain has very strong, passionate convictions. But in addition to that, he has just the world experience to be able to speak clearly and focused on each issue. These aren't issues that he practiced for 2 days and practiced answers.
Well,
But he also does not like Barack Obama, and that came through loud and clear.
But one of the things that I found very distracting, especially when you're watching it on television, was the way that Obama got ruffled very often. There were many times where he was shaking his head and standing back from the platform and, you know, nodding and reacting very directly to the responses that that McCain was making. And I found that distracting. And to be honest, when I'm looking at someone who's going to be sitting across the table with world leaders negotiating, when they hear what they don't like, I don't want somebody who's going to stand there and roll their eyes and shake their head.
Do you want to be someone who says, you don't understand, you're naive? Is that the kind of person you want
we
sitting across the table?
We need someone who can compose himself in a reserved and graceful manner.
I thought
manner.
It was clear that Barack Obama was the composed one between the two, and that seems to be the general consensus. Your views are really surprising to me, and especially because of the way he was being treated by his opponent.
And
I think that when you say to somebody, when you're confident enough in a debate to concede that your opponent is right about something rather small, rather trivial. It's not like he's saying, gee, John, you're right on your philosophy about not being in favor of regulating financial markets. He doesn't say that. It was very clear what he was opposed to.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Did you watch the debate? Your reaction to the debate? Also, your reaction to the bailout program from the feds. Back shortly from Chicago.
See you.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From San Antonio, Texas to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Joellen Lind is here. She is the Associate Dean of the Valparaiso University School of Law, and she is our Democratic spokesman. She wants Barack Obama to be President of the United States. Also joining us this evening is Stephanie Hitt. She is a Republican. She was the 9th District Delegate for John McCain to the convention. She's a mother of four. She's an attorney. So you spend most of your time at home, or are you still doing lawyering?
I spend most of my time in the car driving kids to car. Track activities, yes.
Eric Zorn also joins us, veteran columnist for the last over 20 years now.
Well, really long
How many
time.
Years?
I started in 86. So
86.
22 years.
Eric Zorn, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, soon to be called just the Trib. Is that official tomorrow?
No, it's not official. No, that's just not true.
But
it's still Chicago Tribune. No, it's
really?
Not.
Really? You're not supposed to call it the Trib?
Well, you can, informally, but it's still okay, Chicago okay. Tribune. We're doing a whole new redesign, I invite.
Starts tomorrow.
Starts tomorrow,
Very
yeah.
good.
And I'm still there, so.
Bruno Barrett also joins us. He is a supporter of John McCain, but most importantly, he is a talk show host for WKRS. That's 1220 a.m. on the a.m. dial. And also, you're involved. You won a constitutional convention in Illinois. What's the?
Yeah, that's my big campaign.
You're an activist. You don't just talk about it. You do things.
Exactly right. And I've got a book out. It's called Illinois Deserves Better, The Ironclad Case for an Illinois Constitutional Convention. It's my big project. And I'm a lawyer, too. I decided the first case I should try after 18 years of being a non-practicing lawyer was to sue the Secretary of State over ballot language. And I'm having a lot of fun doing it.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, welcome to your broadcast this evening. We have lots of callers on the line. Let's bring them into the conversation. Sean is listening to us on Sirius XM Radio tonight, listening in San Antonio, Texas. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I wanted to comment on the debate. I am an evangelical voter. I am an Army officer. Been in the Army for 16 years. And so I was looking at this debate to try to make a decision. I'm undecided. And one of the significant things I saw was that McCain did not make eye contact with Barack. Now, it may not be a big deal to the rest of the world, but to Army officers, it's a huge deal. It means that I respect you. If I don't like you, I still respect you enough to know that you are legitimate to be standing next to me. And for him not to give him that respect, just to look at him, it says a lot about his disdain or disrespect, I guess, from Obama as a legitimate candidate. And I have questions about him recognizing the legitimacy of those people that would say, okay, Barack, you can be our president. So he, if he wants to be the president, there is a 46% of Americans that he does not necessarily respect. I mean, that's a stretch, but that's an idea you can, well, you can think about when
let's
I don't
let
look
Bruno,
at
let's let Bruno respond.
See, here's my response to that. And again, had I been debating Barack Obama, I think I would have been more collegial and I would have had it more of a conversation. But I'm not John McCain. The fact is that he's executing a what seems to me in all of this, and I didn't even hear this commentary. I was reading about the substantive part of the debate. It isn't about disrespecting Barack Obama as a person. It's about winning the debate. And if he thought that doing that was winning the debate and coming across as more an alpha male, it has nothing to do with disrespecting 46% of the people. It has to do with simple debate mechanics.
I thought that his whole point. I thought that John McCain was supposed to be a maverick in all ways. He's supposed to be a paradigm shifter and buster. And what he's doing is the same old Republican, Karl Rove, win however you can. Is that your point, that no matter what you need to do to win a debate or an election, you should do when you're morally justified in doing it?
Morally justified to do something wrong, I would argue, of course not.
Where do you draw the line?
You draw the line at simple debate tactics. I mean, if this is a debate tactic, maybe somebody else with a different demeanor would have done something different. It seems to have worked because
Let me give you just sort of a reaction. I got a haircut yesterday and talking to the barber, and the barber said he was watching the debate with his girlfriend. He added his 30-year-old girlfriend. So congratulations for his 30-year-old girlfriend. He's considerably older than 30. But his reaction was, he said, I watched the debate, and he said, John McCain just came across more knowledgeable, more experienced, which I thought he did. When he went through the litany of all the foreign places he'd been, all the foreign leaders, I mean, he was rattling the names off. I mean, he was clearly showing his resume that he's been around a long time. That's why I really thought it was John McCain's strongest performance ever that I've seen him. And I've watched him a long time. However, having said that, the thing that absolutely stuns me about John McCain is because here's a guy who's built much of his national persona, not only being a maverick, but here's the guy that goes on with David Letterman, although he didn't go on last week. I mean, he announced for the president on the Letterman show. He's been on there for years. He goes on all the talk shows. He goes on The View. He goes on with Jay Leno. And he's always showing his humorous side. He shows his humorous side very well. I think he's got a great sense of humor, some of it self-deprecating. But in one night, he erased an entire image of being sort of a
genial
guy. I was, every time they took a reaction shot, I kept saying, he'll be looking at him at the next one. Oh, he'll be looking at him at the next one. He'll be looking at him at the next one. And I understand the tactic that you don't like to, mention, your opponent's name. You do that when you're running for alderman. I don't think you do it when you're running for president.
And I agree. Well, I saw it very differently. I thought this is an opportunity for us to see John McCain as the leader that he is running to be. And that was that he was reserved, he was formal, he was not self-deprecating. And I think we got to see a side that I think Americans want to see in their leader, and that is someone who has a command of information, knowledge, and ability to accept that.
I think we all walked away
with that. Now, one of the things, though,
to me, what kept it from being a grand slam homer was this issue of the humanity of. I mean, he took the time to say some nice things about Ted Kennedy, the Lion of the Senate. I mean, all of this senatorial collegial. He's been there for 35 years. All of this collegial stuff. I mean, he wasn't even collegial to a guy who he serves with as a United States senator who was 8 feet away from him.
I also think, let's rewind a little bit. At the very beginning of the debate, neither man was willing to look at each other. If you remember, Jim Lehrer said, it's okay, you guys can look at each other. You can look and interact.
She said you can talk to each other. I think Obama was looking at it just fine.
Now, Obama may have followed that, I think, to too much of a degree to make it too casual, whereas I think, you know, McCain, in the short preparation that he did make, you know, had committed himself to a particular role and a particular demeanor.
I think
we're going to take a call. We got to get to calls. Joe in Youngstown, Ohio, on WKBN. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to know why the bailout people, you know, the Republicans and Democrats, aren't accepting Peter DeFazio of Oregon's proposal to let the Walmart help pay for itself. From 1914 until 1966, there was a one quarter of 1% tax on every trade made on Wall Street, and that is still in effect in the British stock market. It was started in 1914, and they doubled it during the Depression to help pay for the Depression. Now, why can't they accept that? I heard they turned it down.
Well, it was one of those things, you know, I think we'll be reading books about all the things that got turned down during this during the discussion. Let's go to Carlos listening to us in Houston, Texas, on Sirius XM Radio. Who do you think won the debate, Carlos?
Oh, definitely McCain, and I'll tell you why McCain did not look at Obama. I used to box, and McCain was the boxer. And what we learn is when you look at your opponent, you humanize them and you don't want to beat them up. And that's exactly what McCain was doing. He was avoiding eye contact because he wanted to come out strong, and he did not want to show that he could be friends with Obama, and he would have lost the debate if he would have done that. That's why he did not do eye contact at the boxer Floyd.
You know, I see all these boxing promos where they have the boxers go to these press conferences, and all they do is stare at each other. They go to the weigh-in, and they stare at each other.
Stare down.
And they go and they stare at each other down. I don't think Carlos is on to anything at all with that.
Well, I disagree with you. You can stare each other down to intimidate, like they bark at each other across the way, but you don't want to talk to your opponent. You don't want to show him that you could be friendly. He doesn't want to show you that he could be friendly because then you're not inclined to hurt him.
Let me ask you a broader question that really was one of the most contentious parts of the debate, and that is this whole issue of whether or not a president of the United States should meet with some world despot. Ahmadinejad is the principal culprit here.
I see that very well.
Whether they should meet with him.
No.
Why not?
You do not confer legitimacy upon a dictator and a butcher or anybody as warped opinions as Ahmadinejad. You do not confer the legitimacy of the United States upon such a leader. Do you do back-channeled conversations, as Bush has already said he's done, and as Obama has, you know, Obama and Bush are actually closer to each other on some of this kind of stuff. You do back-channel conversations. You do not confer legitimacy absent them literally caving on an issue.
What about it?
How's that working for us?
It's working just fine.
Is it really?
Yeah.
In North Korea, it's working for us. In Iran, it's working for us.
Well, there's all kinds of interesting things going on with Iran. I can't speak for North Korea. North Korea is one of those weird, intractable situations that I don't think we're going to get a handle on until we're able to. We have to hold China to a standard.
North Korea didn't work. Madeleine Albright went over there to negotiate on a very formal, high-level negotiation, and look where that got us. So, in one sense, that forward-facing diplomacy is really kind of a final step, and you know it cannot be done. It cannot
be done
successfully.
But McCain's we're getting a little bit into this, the cloudy waters that really came out in the debate, and that is the difference between we're talking about whether the president should meet with a despot face to face, and whether or not it gives credibility to that individual. I don't think anybody is debating the fact that emissaries, be they even Secretary of State's, back-channel stuff, it goes on all the time. It should go on all the time. But again, it's the issue of, it's part of this mano-mano thing. I want to talk more about it when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. Should any president sit down with somebody like Ahmadinejad? Back shortly.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're continuing our discussion, as we were doing during the break, about who do you sit down and talk to, and about the McCain's position about that it does, it elevates. And by the way, that's also one of the points. It's like, I mean, obviously, when John Kennedy debated Richard Nixon, one of the reasons why a lot of people say that he won that very first debate, which took place on the very day that the debate took place the other night in Ole Miss, is that he was viewed as being equal. He was on the same playing field as the Vice President of the United States, who everybody knew for 8 years. And just by being next to him, he was elevated. So some would say that just being next to Barack Obama or being next to John McCain, even though neither one is the president, I mean, both were somewhat elevated the other evening. But the idea of whether you're looking at a guy in the face, it's a mono thing about whether or not you're going to give him respect. I mean, John McCain went on and on to talk about that he viewed that it was disrespectful and that you don't want to elevate someone, and that's why you don't talk with him. Is there some degree of truth to that?
I don't see the historical examples of what you're talking about here, where it really was the smart thing to do not to talk to somebody, where you say that really helped, that stopped them, that sure put them in their place. Are there examples of that I'm missing?
But when Nixon went to China, before he went to China and raised the teacup, there was a lot of discussions with a lot of the underlings on both sides before that photo op ever took place.
See, and that's what I think is important here is the other part of this debate, which you cannot forget, is without preconditions. And you know, I've tried to look as much into this as I can, and we have been having conversations with Iran. There are some who theorize that Iran came to us in early 2004 and said, we can help quell what's going on in Iraq if you want us to, and Bush didn't even bother talking to them. That may have been a mistake on Bush's part. I don't know whether that's even a factual account.
The other strong point of the debate that I thought, and again, it was repeated from an earlier discussion in the Democratic primary debate when Barack Obama got into a brouhaha with Hillary Clinton. And that is it wise for a candidate for president of the United States to suggest that you will fight and you'll go inside Pakistan to get Osama bin Laden? Is that what? Even if you believe it, is it wise, and does it demonstrate naivete, as Hillary Clinton said and as John McCain said? Is that a real sophomoric thing for someone running for president to say?
I would have to say no for a lot of complicated reasons, but to me, what's really astonishing is that John McCain would have tried to make that point when his bomb bomb Iran is all over YouTube.
Wait a minute. By the bomb bomb Iran story, and all right, what does that have to do with riling up people inside Pakistan, and an unstable country that has been an ally of the United States? Granted, they got billions of dollars to like us, but what does, when you have someone who wants to be president of the United States saying to the people in that part of the world, you know what, we're going to invade your country if we choose to do so and wage war? Those are two separate things.
It's not what he said. It's not what he said. He didn't say we're going to go into your country and wage war. This is about a strike on actionable intelligence if we knew where the leaders of Al-Qaeda were.
Here's
inside
my point.
Pakistan.
Why
do you say it? It's the policy of the United States, Bruce. It's always the policy of the United States. It's the policy of the Bush administration.
That's right.
Sarah Palin said it yesterday. They asked her, would you do it? She said, I'll do it.
But those
things are done with the cooperation and knowledge and forewarning of that particular government.
We have a very complicated
relationship with Pakistan, and I think that a comment like that demonstrates exactly the naivety. We have a very complicated relationship with Pakistan.
Would we go into Pakistan? Answer me yes or no. What is the policy of the United States? If we knew where Osama bin Laden was, Pakistan said,
yes,
no,
but
don't
do you
go.
Know how
would
it's
we
done.
Say,
it would is
you,
not done just
would
by
we go
sending
or not? Would we go or not?
I think
we would go.
If George Bush had ever uttered those words, he would have been absolutely destroyed by the national media.
See, and this is what this is
even
what
if it is policy.
You know, it may be. I hope it is. But you know what? There's certain things that you on the world stage. There's certain things you don't say.
One could argue that the whole tone and tenor of the Bush administration has been about just this kind of thing. So the criticism would be that Obama's being too much like Bush.
When you go
and talk about the axis of evil and name the nations that you're going to put on your hit list, when you let it be known what you're willing to do with regard to preemptive strikes and so forth,
that's a warning.
I think this is a big teapot over nothing. I do think
they spent a lot of time talking.
Well,
about
I know
it,
they yeah. did, but I'm. But let me just say it. It scares me more to see John McCain do what he does, and I think it scared the people who saw the debate. He came across as somebody who is not in control of his emotions particularly, and who seems to be mean-spirited. And where was the person who said, you know, I hate war? He certainly wasn't at that podium during the debate.
That's simply not true. I mean, let's take a step back from all of the he said, she said, and nana and a boo boo, and he didn't look.
About.
And well, actually, here's the thing: debates should also be about substantive policy. And I think what we saw the other night is one of the best substantive policy debates we've seen in this country in a long time from two accomplished people. And we're getting distracted by who's doing this or who's doing what where. I think it's fascinating that what Obama is talking about is closer to what Bush is talking about than what McCain says.
We got to wrap it up. On that note, we say farewell in hour number one. We have been joined by four great guests. They were so great, they're coming back for the second hour. If you're watching us on television, we're going to see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, 1-800-723-8289, we got a full board of lights. A lot of people want that debate. What do you think about everything we're talking about? I'm Bruce Dumont, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont, where we continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight, featuring commentary by Democrat Joellen Lind, Republican Stephanie Hitt, talk show host Bruno Barron, and Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8029. We're taking America's political pulse, not only on the new $700 billion bailout program, which the Congress will debate and perhaps vote on, likely to vote on and be signed by the president this coming week, but also giving a review to the debate of last Friday at Ole Miss between Barack Obama and John McCain. 1-800-723-8029. During the break, Stephanie, you were making a very impassioned plea about what the race is all about and about the importance of this, how people judge John McCain and Barack Obama. Share that with the audience.
One of the things I think that we saw, and it came out somewhat in the discussion on, you know, would you bomb Pakistan and things, is that what we are seeing emerge are two very different types of leaders. And so the question that we have to answer as voters is, what are we looking for in a leader when it comes to foreign policy? We've got significant issues all around the world. We've got Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Russia, China. And each one of those are multifaceted things. And so what we need to do is listen to the debate and understand that what we are seeing are two different types of leaders that emerge. One wants to take a more diplomatic approach to foreign policy, and that would be Obama. And the other one wants to use our strength either through economics or military or through American policy, and that would be more of John McCain. And so the question we need to ask ourselves is, what does the world need from America's leader in terms of dealing with foreign issues? I know the answer I have for that is, and we've seen the success of that in the 80s with Ronald Reagan, is that, you know, the strength matters. And diplomacy is somewhat secondary.
Joelle and Linda Velp.
It seems to me that one of the huge problems with your point is that we've never been in a weaker position, in part because of the way foreign policy has been conducted by George Bush. And McCain made it very clear last night that he is four more years of George Bush when it comes to his foreign policy style. He's not in favor of negotiation. He is in favor of trying to use a big stick. Our stick has been whittled down to a little twig. We are overextended.
That's actually part
of the problem that we've got going on here.
That's actually not true. And what I think is fascinating about this is we can all sit there and look at the poll numbers internationally and sit there and say, oh gosh, America's not liked anymore. The fact is that since Iraq, all of the anti-war leaders in Europe have been switched over to much more pro-American, much more aggressive, more center-right people. We have a nuclear deal coming down the pike with India that is going to create an unbelievably powerful axis of democracies. We've got Australia, Japan. Internationally, the United States, and I know people out there who hate George Bush. Boy, they just want to beat on the guy because he just doesn't speak well and all this other stuff. The fact is that George Bush has been phenomenally successful in building a very powerful, what we could very well call the axis of good. And you can look at poll numbers and all these, oh, but the Australians don't like us. Who cares? What matters is, where is the United States from a standpoint of power? And we're actually in a very good position right now.
I'm not talking about how the Australians feel about us. I'm talking about the fact that the Iranians are able to do what they've done because of the policies of George Bush, that Putin feels emboldened because of the policies of this country. We've got more chaos in the world now, not less, and I think most Americans would feel really shocked to think that you think we're better off.
Eric, speak to Stephanie's point about these two styles of leaders that the American people will choose.
At the risk of seeming very weak and non-columnist-like, I would agree with most of the premise of her statement that she started with. The only thing is, I think that in a sense, I want to also give some credit to McCain for having some diplomatic instincts, and also to say that Obama has said that he is more than willing to use American military power when he feels it's important. That you can't, he's not going to be a guy who hesitates to use the military when he feels that our interests are at stake. That said, I think that you framed the question very well. I think that there is that stylistic difference between someone who is primarily who has this diplomatic impulse, I should say. And so I think the question is well phrased, and I think that there were some sharp differences that were shown the other night in the debate for people to actually choose between them. We don't have to sit there and argue about the little details like McCain couldn't say Ahmadinejad and so on. But the point about whether this America is whether the world is a safer place, whether we are safer here now than we were before 9/11, I mean, I think that's still an open question. And I think that our ability to marshal a multilateral force, I mean, how many nations are still with us over Iraq?
I think one of the concerns, and this addresses, I think, what Stephanie was saying, is these difference in styles. Because you look at the style, and although maybe there's some people around the world that don't like us, you know, something that I've said on this program, the one thing that everyone should give credit to George Bush, there has not been another attack on the United States. George Bush deserves some credit because of that. And what my concern would be is that from a stylistic way, you have someone who leads from strength, maybe from a little bit of saber rattling, a little bit of maybe off the cuff, you know, flippant rhetoric. Maybe that's part of what leadership. They said that about Reagan. They said it about Bush. They're now saying it about McCain. Whereas the other issue is the lawyerly, the scholarly review at it. Oh, well, you know what? We're not going to round everybody up because you got to read them their rights. And, you know, the issue of, you know, being more concerned about reading someone their rights at Guantanamo than stopping the next attack that's going to blow up Cleveland.
Those aren't mutually exclusive concerns. I mean, the reason that we are such a great country is that we have some of these values, right?
But part of it is... Part of it is stylistically. What happens when there's a big crisis? Are you going to react to it, or are you going to bring in the advisors, and are you going to lawyer it?
I hope that you bring in some advisors, because I don't think that some of this knee-jerk reaction where you got John McCain going, you know, the fundamentals of the economy are strong. No, that's not right. Let's call a commission. No, that's not right. I'm going to suspend my campaign. Let's do that. I mean, I want someone who takes a few minutes to think before he runs off and does something.
But what I want is Stephanie, a leader who has been thinking all along, and so that when that time does come, he brings in his advisors, but he is prepared and ready. He doesn't have to wait until it happens and then decide how to react. And what we do see with someone like John McCain, with his great experience and the fact that he has been involved in pretty much every security issue over the last, you know, 20 years, is that he is someone that has thought it. He has a strategy. He has a plan. He knows all the hot spots around the world.
But has he, when he goes in,
he will be ready. He won't have to wait too long for his advisors.
But has he, in the course of all of this, you know, 30-plus years as a member of the national political scene, and running a whole campaign and running a whole convention about country first, is it really a strong demonstration of country first when you select Sarah Palin to be a heartbeat away? Do you really care that much about the United States and where it might go if you select as your running mate someone who does not appear to be ready for prime time? That's the question. I'm going to give everybody a chance to respond to it when we come back. 1-800-723-8029 as we switch our discussion to Sarah Palin and the debate coming up.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Hanover, New Hampshire to Eureka, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations and Sirius satellite radio, Sirius XM satellite radio, every Sunday night from coast to coast and border to border. And before the break, I had asked Stephanie, I want to give you the opportunity to respond to this because you're a mother of four, you're a Republican, you like John McCain, you're a woman. You have to be at least excited. Have you ever had a moose burger?
Yes. No, I haven't, and I've never killed anything.
What does it say? What does it say about John McCain's leadership when he selects Sarah Palin, who at least at this moment does not appear to be up to leading the free world, if God forbid it was ever handed to her?
I first of all, I'm going to disagree with the premise that she's not up to the job. Because, first of all, I know people are talking about the Katie Couric interview where she stumbled in some of her interviews.
It's hard to avoid it.
What I'm going to say is, yes, I think he did an amazing job. And how he showed his leadership is in several ways. One, and this is sort of a smaller issue, but a very important one, is he took the opportunity to show that not only is he running for president, but he's also demonstrating leadership with the Republican Party. What he has shown is that he is someone who is concerned about the future of government, the future of the party, and one that needs reform. And by selecting her, he's looking to the future. And I think we should be excited
That would be party first, that's not country first.
And I think in the other, what we see in Sarah Palin is she is someone with legitimate, credible executive experience. She deals with legislators, action groups, oil companies. She has had to go one-on-one with them, debate them, make decisions, and fight them if needed. And what she has done is built a skill set and an ability to make judgments in certain contexts, and that is negotiating, legislating, making executive decisions. And those are clearly things you either have it or you don't.
We hear that about all governors, and the same criticism could be of any governor. That's not part of their job description to deal with foreign affairs for the most part.
Fair enough. But before Eric and Joellen go and have their moose shoot on Sarah Palin, let me just get this in. From the standpoint of McCain picking her, I think what it shows, quite frankly, is someone who's willing to take some risks, which, quite frankly, is better for America than the kind of person who sits there and says, gosh, what do I do to best bolster my resume on this and go out and... I mean, to sit there and compare picking Joe Biden, who has now disappeared, I think we might be finding him on a milk carton somewhere soon.
Wait, let me interrupt. I just want to say one thing before you do. Joe Biden was all over the TV after the debates on Friday, talking to reporters, asking questions. Sarah Palin was under a box somewhere. They have not let her out. She is unable, unfit to answer questions about the debate.
You do not judge a person's fitness to make decisions in an executive position, whether she ends up as president or not someday. You do not judge that by how well they handled Katie Couric. You judge that by what they've done. I mean, we're comparing. One of the things beautiful about this, and I think McCain has demonstrated some genius here, is that we're running around comparing Sarah Palin to Barack Obama while Joe Biden disappears and McCain floats above the fray. And quite frankly, at the end of the day, Sarah Palin took on her party in her state, and she does have executive experience, and she has demonstrated that she can lead.
I agree. Okay. Politics as a political decision, mm-hmm. It was a brilliant political decision. I've said that on the air. Okay. I don't think she's a dummy. Mm-hmm. I think she's smart. My question to you is, when John McCain is saying country first, of all the people, of the millions and millions, the hundreds of millions of people that could have been selected, he is saying she is absolutely the best.
I'll be very
and
brief.
And you're talking about her record of reform. I'm going to acknowledge she's done all that stuff. Ted Stevens was an absolute piece of garbage. Okay,
she gets
a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
But the point is, a heartbeat away.
Okay. And
in a very dangerous, you've just described the dangerous world. All of the reasons why people might want to choose John McCain over Barack Obama, when you throw Sarah Palin into that mix, it's
I got a very quick response to that, and that is this. If you honestly believe that you are the better candidate and that you are at risk of possibly losing an office, and I don't necessarily know that he was, but if you look at you yourself as a better candidate, you make the decision where you win the election, and Sarah Palin was a good decision on that part. And you know what? Is it a risk? Absolutely it's a risk, but that's what presidents should be doing.
Well, you're the guys who are saying, you know what, here's a risk, meeting with Ahmadinejad.
That's
a risk? All of a sudden, you're praising this risk. I mean, what is with you guys? Sarah Palin is a lightweight. She showed it in the Charlie Gibson interview. She showed it in the Katie Couric interview. Every time she's asked a question off the cuff, she shows it. She showed an ability to read a speech very well at the convention. I give her that, but you say that this was a brilliant political decision. We still have how many weeks to go now to the election? More than a month to go. She hasn't passed any test. We've got a debate coming up. She's going to have to get out there and be able to talk about what she actually believes in.
She has passed the political test in that she solidified the base, politics 101, solidify your base. Let me finish. She did that. She drew 60,000 people the last week in Florida. She's raising money. She's bringing the groups together. So from that from a political standpoint.
Maybe not.
From a political standpoint, right now, it's still a plus.
Yeah. But my question is,
you know, looking at it, is it the best thing for the country? I'm putting it in the context of the slogan of the McCain campaign.
Well, you've got
country first. Ellen.
I think it's not placing country first. I think it's placing politics first. It's not placing women first. I don't even think it's placing the Republican Party first.
Why isn't it placing women first?
Because I don't think that Sarah Palin stands for any of the issues that working-class women need to have addressed in order to be better off and survive. And they're figuring that out as they find out more about her. And so that's why her popularity is waning.
Well, I'm a woman, and I feel like she stands for a lot of things. I mean, she has shown that, and that she does. She stands for families, the very things that women care about. And
I think they care about whether their families have enough to eat.
And
why does she stand for families? Because she has five kids? What makes
exactly.
her stand for families?
I mean,
what do you mean exactly? Five?
She has
number of kids
hard.
Doesn't mean you stand
she
for families.
Is a
what
fighter?
About the men who have children? Do they not stand for family,
oh, no,
too?
She can stand for all families. However, one of the things that she does, she brings to the ticket a sense of not only reform, but a fighting sense, that she's someone who's going to fight for what is best for the country. And I think she compliments John McCain very well.
She can't even say what that is.
She has proven that she has fought what was best in her state.
Eric, that's I saw just enough of the Couric interview to understand that she should have
watched the whole thing.
She should have done a better job in that interview. But here's the thing. We're not really going to find out exactly what she's up to or what's going on or what's happening in this race until she debates Biden. And we'll see something and maybe after Biden debate, I'm going to be forced to sit there and go, gosh, maybe that was too much of a risk or a risk too far.
You didn't watch that Couric debate and go, my Lord, what's going on?
Let me give you a real quick answer to that. I'll just go back and I'll bring up my dad, okay? My dad was one of the least articulate people you could imagine in life. And if that guy had been forced into an interview situation or a tough situation, he couldn't answer a question to save his life. But he was a very smart engineer. He was a smart guy. You can't sit there and say, oh, because you didn't handle Katie Couric well, you might not be able to lead.
She wasn't even being handled. No, she was asked easy questions. She wasn't handling her.
Katie Couric is not Edward R. Murrow.
Right, exactly. And
fair enough.
Isn't it interesting how the talk has changed, how the story has changed? When she talked at the convention, all we heard about was how articulate she was, how smart she was, how on the ball she was. And now, as Eric's saying, nobody's going to let her out because they're afraid that she will say something dire if she's not being managed, which she did today, apparently.
What did she say today?
Oh, she agreed with Obama about sending strikes into Pakistan.
Well, so she agrees with Bush about sending strikes into Pakistan. We've been doing it
for
about 3 weeks.
We're going to go to Al in Griffith, Indiana on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air listening to us, but you're talking coast to coast.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Fine.
I'm glad to listen to and talk to some thoughtful people.
Thank you.
I'd like to get back to, I think the reason John McCain refused or was unable to have eye-to-eye contact with Barack Obama during the debate was the fact that he constructed on the stage a situation where he didn't have to escalate into the possible hair trigger temper that he's renowned for. Being able to avoid that, he decided to avoid, you know, eye-to-eye contact so that if he did get angry, it might escalate to the next step. And I know it might be a stretch.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing about John McCain?
It's an interesting thing. I mean, it kind of shows that in order to control himself, that is a tactic he took, I believe.
What about that? I mean, his stories of his temper are legendary.
Yes. Stories of Bill Clinton's temper are legendary. That, what was it? Before Britt Hume went to Fox News, he talked about, he asked Clinton a tough question on the White House lawn pertaining to something, and Clinton could barely contain himself. You know, you want a president who doesn't have any temper or any thoughts or any emotion? You look at Barack Obama at that debate. There was a guy who was close to losing his temper as well. And quite frankly, give him credit for having kept his cool under those circumstances. These are non-issues. I'd love to talk more about the policies these men are promoting.
But that's a personal element of it, though, I believe.
Well, perhaps.
Yeah. Another thing I'd like to say also...
10 seconds.
Is that someone on the panel mentioned that you shouldn't have... contact with adversaries on a national level, whereas we would send military weapons and possibly chemical weapons to Iraq to fight on the Iran front when we were supporting Saddam Hussein.
All right, we're going to have to move on that point. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse. And we've got a full border lights. I promise you, my campaign pledge, wall-to-wall calls when we come back live from Chicago.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We're going to go to calls in just a moment after I tell everybody that Bruno Behrendt is here. He is a talk show host called Extreme Wisdom, and extremewisdom.com is his website, and it's on WKRS Radio. That's 1220 a.m., 10 to noon, right, every day?
Mondays and Fridays in
Mondays
Chicago,
and Fridays.
In Northern Illinois.
And Stephanie Hitt joins us. She is a Republican. She is a McCain delegate. She is a lawyer. She is a mother of four, and she's carrying the water for the McCain campaign this evening. Also joining us this evening is Jo Ellen Lind. She is the Associate Dean at the Valparaiso College of Law in Valparaiso, Indiana, and she is our Obama supporter tonight. And Eric Zorn, the longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune, joins us this evening. And again, for those listening around the country, we are on, hopefully, knock on wood, we may be on the verge of history, because you all know by now that the Chicago Cubs are going to the playoffs. They're going to be taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Phillies have won the East. The Milwaukee Brewers have won the wild card in the National League. In the American League, it will be the Angels, probably the best team in the American League, against the Red Sox and the Devil Rays, or the Rays from Tampa Bay. They're going to play either the White Sox. My voice is a little scratchy today because I was out cheering the White Sox to a victory this afternoon over the Cleveland Indians, and they will be in a game tomorrow, which they must win. It is the last game of the season. Everybody else has stopped playing. There's a makeup game against the Detroit Tigers if they have a chance to tie, and they have to win that game. And then they play the Minnesota Twins, hopefully, on Tuesday. And if they beat them, they will be the Central Division champion. So we have the possibility, for the first time since 1908, to have two Chicago baseball teams in postseason play. So Chicago will be one happening place. It already is a happening place.
And Los Angeles is a happening place, too.
But again, it's not a big deal for them.
I know, they don't care.
They do. Well, they do it all the time.
Yeah. Like, oh, the Angels and the Dodgers never played in the series, have they? No.
No, not with each other.
So,
that's
there
right.
There you go.
But again, they have both been in playoffs before.
Something else to pay attention to.
You got it. Anyway, thanks very much. We'll all know what the full story is next Sunday night. Some teams will be eliminated by then. Let us go back to calls. Let's go to Mary, listening to us in Effingham, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air, Mary.
Yeah, you were discussing McCain's mannerism during the debate. I don't know, but I think if you would rerun the paper, observe Obama's, some of his mannerisms, I thought were a little bit on the rude side when he kept interrupting McCain on some of his answers. And the other thing, toward the end of the debate, I mean, he made a motion with his hand like he was running the debate. He motioned to Tim Lehrer like, okay, let's get it on or let's get it over with. I mean, frankly, I think if you want to compare the two, I don't think there's anything that would be improved over McCain's mannerism.
All right, well, that is your opinion. And
that's not only that, the other thing I'd like to mention, the vice presidential debate, I don't know, is Joe Biden so swift? Some of the stupid things he's...
Well, he has the ability to say some stupid things.
Yeah, I would say so.
And we'll all be tuned in
and
Thursday
I don't
night.
Think, the other thing is, I don't think his health situation is that much better in some respects, than McCain.
Well, I don't know about that, and I'm not a doctor.
Well, didn't he have an aneurysm?
Well, he had an aneurysm, right. I mean, you know, everybody could get a big chest pain. He's been through it. I mean, health could happen to anybody.
Aneurysm is brain, though, right?
It is brain. So. It is brain-related.
Can I just comment on her call just real quickly?
Yes,
I think that you can
ahead.
See that people's views of the body language and the mannerisms are really based on their conceptions. Like, if you liked McCain, you liked his style and his style, and if you like Obama, you liked his style. It's sort of an interesting thing. I don't think you're going to hear someone saying, you know, I was really for Obama, but he interrupted McCain too much. I'm switching my vote. These are sort of atmospherics. They're interesting to talk about.
No, but I think also you can if you can. You know, be independent or objective. You can say, content, I thought McCain did very well.
Yeah.
I also thought that Obama looked presidential.
I thought they both.
I thought it was to me it looked rude. for McCain not to look at Barack Obama
at
any point.
And Obama he did interrupt occasionally, and whatever. I mean, I think it's one of the things where
minor stuff. There's going to be bigger, broader issues. There's bigger fish to fry, and Sarah Palin will tell us how to do it on Thursday night. Mike in Fresno, California, on KMJ. Go ahead.
A good show, Bruce.
Thanks.
Today, Chris Dodd, Nancy Pelosi, Barney Frank, and Harry Reid came out on the TV today and explained to us how great they were and what they've done. Chris Dodd should be in jail.
Absolutely. You're dead right. It's about time somebody said so, and they should frog march Barney Frank with him.
I was going to say, they should be cellmates.
Why do you think you should go to jail? Go ahead,
he got a favorable loan. His wife's got emails. They got copies of it. Kent Conrad. There's four other guys. I don't know if they're Democrats or Republicans. You should resign. Do us all a favor. The shell game's over with. You got Charlie Rangel not reporting income. Yep. I explained to my 20-year-old son, I said, this is why this country's history.
Well, Bruno.
The fox is running the chicken coop. It's a joke. We have no chance. And until anybody stands up and says, hey, I failed as a leader, I'm resigning. You gave me your trust. I was supposed to lead, and I can't. So if Chris Dodd ever told the truth, he might get a black hair.
The one thing I agree with the caller on, and quite frankly, I think the Republic is safe and we will survive, so take heart, everybody. But what the untold story here, and if I were to give McCain the highest negative mark for the debate, where he really missed the boat early in the debate, was in reiterating, and once again, instead of talking about earmarks, talking about how every single major Barack Obama advisor was present at the creation of this mess. Franklin Raines should be in jail. Johnston should
Franklin
be in jail.
Franklin Raines is not an Obama advisor.
He was an Obama advisor. He was listed on the... Yes, he was listed. Okay, we'll take
they
this up.
What about the money that McCain's own advisor, Rick Davis, is taking every month from Freddie and Fannie in his consulting firm. I don't think you really want to go there.
I want to go there, and here's why. Don't. You know what? Maybe that person should be fired, but the fact is that Barney Frank and Chris Dodd were... In a sense, they took a bribe to protect a criminal racketeering organization, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And quite frankly, whether you want to talk about who McCain's advisors are or not, at the end of the day, John McCain was out there in 2003, and he was out there again in 2006 saying, this is a mess about to happen, and these people were taking money protecting these institutions. There is a story to be told here, because while everybody has some blame to go around for this, all the way back to Jimmy Carter and all the way back to and Dennis Hastert, you know, throw him into the mix as well, because he's as guilty on this. So this is bipartisan.
It's a bipartisan mess. I agree with that.
And these were the same people that were fighting. I mean, they were in Congress. They were fighting when they had enough votes to vote against the Republican majority, and then as the Democratic majority, never once took seriously the fights for reform on this.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Austin, Texas, where David is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bruce, great show. I just wanted to point out there are two points where the highest negative marks go against McCain and where he really lost the debate last night, and this is kudos to Obama. There's one point where Barack said, this is a final verdict of 8 years of failed economic policies by George Bush and supported by Senator McCain. And that goes along with 90% of the time McCain voting along with Bush. And you can see it in McCain's face where he just was like, oops, that's going to hurt. And the second one was around where Barack had said that, he's actually looking at McCain. He has the guts to look at him. And he said that you said the occupation of Iraq was going to be quick, easy, that there are weapons of mass destruction there, and that we'd be greeted as liberators. And you were wrong on all fronts. So those are the two areas for sure that crushed McCain, and that's why he lost the debate. One more.
Well, I agree that to me that was the strongest exchange of the night with Obama. I think that's where he landed it, and I think the criticism that has been leveled against Obama, not just because of Friday night, but I think in some of the other debates, and that is this professorial view, this air that he has. I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there, Democrats, they want to see him haul off and slug somebody.
He landed
not
the, yeah.
physically. They want him to grow a pair and show that he's got them.
He landed that punch, but then he danced back. He didn't keep pummeling. And you know, it must have been a note on McCain's lectern saying, "Obama doesn't understand. He's naive. Say this over and over again." Because that he hit that over and over again. If Obama had hit this, you know, we're talking about judgment. You were wrong. You were wrong. You were wrong. If he'd hit that more,
can a 47-year-old man pick on a 73-year-old opponent? I mean, is that part of it? Do you have to be somewhat deferential? Is that one of these? And Obama you throw the race thing in there. That can work both ways.
Obama has sportsmanlike conduct. If you look at like the players on a golf course, there's a certain amount of sportsmanlike conduct you have, and not having the guts to look at someone the way that McCain did last night is just a shame. But a lot of the blogs today, by the way, Bruce, they're talking about whether McCain should have even showed up or not. And in the reality, if he didn't show up to this, if he would have weaseled his way out, which he almost did, he would be in much better shape now. So it's a shame for the Republican Party that McCain actually showed up last night.
Yeah, coming from the blogs and the DFA and whoever else is talking about this kind of stuff. Look, at the end of the day, half of that stuff, and I agree that McCain could have come back very quickly on that one. Half of that stuff that he said, "You were wrong, you were wrong, you were wrong," McCain could have come back with very good answers, because you might say that about Bush, you could not say those things about McCain.
Right. I think if anything,
say it in a few minutes.
Showed the opposite of what you're arguing, is that McCain's view on the strategy in Iraq shows exactly where he has differed over these last 8 years.
Shortly, 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. I'm live from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Pismo Beach in California to Poughkeepsie, New York, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Let's go to Elk Grove, California. Ron is listening to us on KTKZ. That's Salem Radio for your area. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think in selecting Palin, McCain's judgment really stinks. She's the one that's been hiding. You have somebody there lying about Biden, who's gone through dozens and dozens of interviews. And McCain, don't forget, wanted to duck this debate, right? I think he's intimidated. His bit about bombing Iran, I think that indicates a dangerous and bloodthirsty punk. He sold out the POWs in the 90s. And he also collaborated in the 60s with the North Vietnamese. It's on tape, Vietnam Veterans Against John McCain.com.
I heard he performs abortions, too. I mean, come on. That's ridiculous.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Youngstown, Ohio. Morris is listening to us on the Big 57 WKBN. Go ahead.
And it's a great show tonight, Bruce. I just wanted to say I'm glad that last caller addressed that point because I've seen Joe Biden everywhere. Sarah Palin's the hard one to find. But also, I'm an Obama supporter, but I have to admit I watched the debate, but I also had the radio on. I was all over the house. And just like with the Kennedy-Nixon debate, when I listened, it sounded like McCain had the better of Obama on certain points. And then I liked... But then again, I am an Obama supporter. But ultimately, I have to agree with the one caller who said near the end of the debate, I thought some of Obama's gestures and facial expressions were a little weird. I was a little put off by it, even as a supporter.
Now, has that changed the performance in the debate and the strength that McCain showed and some of the reactions of Obama? Has that changed your mind in any way?
Not in any way, because I have to say, I know John McCain is not George Bush, but I don't think the Republican Party has anything to hang its hat on and shouldn't be rewarded. I'm going to try something different. I just cannot vote for John McCain.
So you're willing to take a risk then on something unknown and something new on the job training?
Yes, much as McCain did with Palin.
Ba-doom.
Thank you. Yes, but she's number two.
Gotcha.
Will learn.
And to the caller's point, and again, I'm a pro McCain person in this case. But to the people who, if there's any McCain political consultants, the people who are feeding Palin these lines about how she has foreign policy experience from looking at Canada and Russia, that person should be fired. They're an idiot. And somebody, I mean, either let Palin out and let Palin be Palin, as they talk about it, or but figure something out here because I don't know what's going on.
You know, when she was first mentioned, Chris Roebling, who is one of our regular Republican guests, that was the line that he came out with. He came out with a line that, you know, she is the governor of Alaska. It's close to, Russia. We all laughed. I mean, everyone could. We thought that was just a flippant joke. Right. And here, this is point number one on the talking points that she has this experience. And of course, you know, as she explained to Katie Couric, when they fly into her airspace,
you think there's some rope-a-dope going on here? Like maybe the bar is just sinking lower and lower and lower. And then Thursday she's going to come out. She's going to sound.
The ratings will be higher than last Friday.
She's
going to
sound like Zbigniew Brzezinski.
I was one of those people as well that said, well, you know, it's not out of the park to think that when you are next door to Russia and you do share, you know, international waterway, that you aren't going to have some contact with Russia.
But see, what I think is stupid about that, frankly, is they looked at it just as a geographic issue. The reality is no governor. Has that's not part of their experience. A governor normally doesn't do those things. So in that case, she is equal to every other governor that's ever run. The only difference is maybe she's being picked on because she's a woman. That's the card they should have played,
right?
Not because, well, we're close because, you know, I can see Russia. That's like foolish.
Yeah, well, and I agree. I think the mistake is what we see in a governor is someone with skill sets,
and that's applicable to foreign policy. I think the issue here, and this is the one where I think some people are most concerned. They would like to think that if you're a governor or a mayor, or if you're, frankly, over 35 and eligible to be the leader of the free world, that you have some degree of curiosity that's demonstrated by traveling the world, reading great books, being able to have intelligent discussions on a wide variety of issues, just being a little bit curious. And they may be a little more sensitive and looking for that, because for the last 8 years, we've had a president who has not been very
one
curious.
Of the names that was floated quite a bit early on about a running mate for Bush was Bobby Jindal, I think his name is. He's the governor, the governor of Louisiana, young guy, hadn't been around very long. Bobby Jindal is widely considered to be someone, a serious person who thinks serious thoughts about serious issues, is engaged in all these things. Jindal was someone who, you know, they ran the risk of the experience card being played against him. But Jindal is someone with some weight, I thought. And he, you know, if he had picked Jindal, I don't think we would be having this discussion about what a lightweight the president.
But I think what we're seeing,
Sarah Palin
too,
is not that person.
And you know, and I don't want to sound cliche, but what we're seeing is an elitist attack on Sarah Palin.
Elitist? How
oh,
so?
No, no. There's the same attack. Just because somebody
talks
a lot about
her. No one has
her.
Ever accused me of being an elitist.
You know, but what I'm saying is those general arugula. Descriptions, those are the same kind of attacks that are on George. He doesn't seem well read enough.
He's not.
Interesting.
He's
curiosity.
Not.
But
good.
What we are looking
are
at,
quotes.
When we look
those
at Sarah Palin is... And what, you know, our world needs a balance is we've got someone who knows how to roll up her
that
sleeves.
That sort of reminds me of the Arthur old remark issues. That was made when who was it who tried to make those appointments to the Supreme Court who turned out to be incredibly mediocre?
Carswell. Here's the one thing.
We sort of need roles for dumb people everywhere.
Here's the one thing we've all got to remember. Adlai Stevenson ran for president twice, never won. George W. Bush ran for president twice and won. Case closed. On that note, we have to say farewell to Stephanie Hitt, our Republican. She was a McCain delegate. Bruno Barron, he is with his own show on WKRS Mondays and Fridays. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune and Joellen Lind, Associate Dean of the Valparaiso School of Law at Valparaiso, Indiana. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Wilbur Entertainment. Our thanks to Tom Vera-Cruz and Patrick Johnson for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red!
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.